Radio Gorgeous supports women. Women support Radio Gorgeous.
I don't want a lot for Christmas. There is just one thing I need. I don't care about the presents underneath the Christmas tree. I just want you for my own. Make my wish come true. All I want for Christmas is...
So we're here talking to Karen Swan about her book Christmas Eclairages. Yeah. And our heroine is Clem Alderton.
Yes.
She's incredibly compelling, although I don't know why. I mean, she is gorgeous.
Yes.
She's got these amazing turquoise eyes. She's tall. She's thin. I'm starting not to like her.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, exactly.
Basic nightmare.
Yeah. You know, and she seems to have it all, but she's quite spoiled and vain and irresponsible.
Yes. Exactly. There's something not quite right there. She's got everything, and you start to feel maybe she doesn't. Maybe actually she has nothing. Everything is shifting sands in her world. She refuses to commit to a relationship. She can't hold down a job. She's supported by her brother and her parents. Her best friends are her props who kind of keep her going. And you have this sense that she's living this life that she's managed to get away with for so long because she's young and she's beautiful. She's almost running out of time. She's getting older. People are beginning to settle down. And actually what was charmingly reckless when she was young actually is just coming across as obnoxious and irresponsible now that she's, you know, knocking on the door of 30.
You know, I get the feeling someone could have looked at my life and said the same thing. Minus the fabulously beautiful and all that other business part. But yeah, that sounds really familiar.
Yeah.
Except move in from New York through to Portobello.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, yeah, this is sounding familiar.
Exactly.
Get your act together. It's not cute anymore, you know.
Exactly.
Kind of thing.
That pressure does come in on people, you know. And sometimes life gets ahead of you and you're not necessarily ready to make these changes. But, you know, you hit a certain number and people want you to behave in a certain way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the book starts with an incredibly frightening, I don't know if you meant it to be, but like heart pounding.
Yes.
I was in bed and my husband, I'm like, I don't know if I can read this book.
Yeah.
It's going to be like this. Like, I'm scared. Like, I'm really scared.
It's very ambiguous and very dark.
Yes.
And, it's such a shock to then go from reading that scene to a New Year's Eve party on the Portobello Road 10 years later, which is totally frothy and, you know, she's a party girl and it's, you know, beautiful people and there's music and there's bells and everyone's drinking vodka shots. And it's such a contrast, but you know, that is the point. And it's amazing, actually, how people, when they're reading books, forget the prologue. They kind of go straight into the action. And it's only as you get to the reveal at the back that you go, oh, that's what that meant, you know.
Yeah, well, for me, it was something that propelled me through the read. Mm. And the read is very compelling. Mm. It's very engrossing. You want to know what happens next. That very first night when we go to a New Year's Eve party, we meet this mysterious man.
Yes.
And that develops over time. And relationships with her family we see developing and changing and hitting the skids. But to me, that essential mystery that's set up in that first, you know, sort of prologue chapter is sort of propelling me through the book.
Because
I need to know what, I mean, obviously it's there for a reason.
Yes, exactly.
It is information. So I throughout the book, it kept me having a guessing game.
Yes.
Is that it? Is that it? Is that
yes.
It? What was that? What was that? Who was that? Was it them? Was it this?
Exactly.
So that was really fun. So it takes place in three sort of magical places.
Yeah.
Portobello.
Yes.
And what is it? It's almost like that's a village into itself.
Oh, I love Portobello. I spent most of my teenage years, my weekends, going up and down that road because I love markets.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to work in the fashion industry, so I would be rummaging around in the you know, in the vintage fashion section at the end.
Yes, down at the bottom.
I wouldn't emerge for days, and I'd come out with all these bags, you know. And
ratty old fur hats.
Exactly.
You know, I have them.
Yeah. And, you know, and I... actually then didn't go for about 10 years. And when I went back, because I was researching the book, and I thought, I need to find, where is her flat going to be? And what's her view from her flat? And what are the shops around it? And which section of the market is she on? Is she on the antique section? Or is she in the clothing or the fruit and veg? So I wanted to research it all. I wanted to check out the bars and the pubs. And I had a...
Lucky you.
I know.
You were forced to do that.
My job rules. And I took my husband up, and we basically had a day and a night being... I was being Clem. My husband was not being Clem. being Clem and having so much fun. And it was like it had never changed, and it was like I had never changed. I was 18 again in my head. Sadly, not the body. And just had a ball. I just love it there.
Yeah, it was really magical.
Yeah.
Well, one thing, she sort of, we're not going to give away any plot points, but she sort of screws up to the point where she's, basically her family isn't speaking to her.
Yes.
Her friends are barely, you know, barely tolerating her. And in order to redeem the situation, there's an opportunity, almost forced, that she moves temporarily to Portofino.
Yes.
In Italy, where she has spent some time in her youth. She had what do you call it? Pen pal.
That's right.
As did her brother. Yes. And so they did sort of an exchange.
Exactly.
And stayed there for a while. Okay. So tell me about Portofino. Do you have as much affinity for Portofino as you do for Portobello?
Oh, God. You know, it was one of those places I always wanted to go to. I'd kind of grown up on the iconography of, you know, Audrey Hepburn, Cary Grant, you know, all the greats on those cobbles on that tiny little harbour. And I'd always wanted to go. And I was going out to Rome to speak at a literary festival. And I said to my husband, well, you know, if I'm in Rome, I may as well be in Portofino. So we went to Portofino for a few days before. And it's exactly as you imagine it will be.
Yeah.
It's so unchanged. It's extraordinary. And, you know, we drove all around that area. We walked all along the back paths behind the village, which then turn into just mud tracks and then just no tracks at all. And I took photographs of the drain covers, of the windows. I mean, I just, what statuary they had on the roofs. I just photographed everything so that I had this really comprehensive sense. And actually, I was really pleased because the day we got there, it was raining. And my husband said, oh, God, this is awful. I can't believe we're in Portofino and it's raining. I said, no, this is brilliant. I said, I totally know what this place looks like in the sunshine, because that's what all the images are of. But actually, to be somewhere like here, if my character's going to spend time out here, I need to know how it feels out of peak season. And I need to know actually what a place like that, which is so tiny, feels like in the rain. So I actually had a ball. I was just, again, photographing everything like mad.
Yeah, and again, for the people who live there, kind of a claustrophobic almost feel in the winter. Or
it's so small. Yeah. And, you know, the numbers swell dramatically in the summer. But, you know, I'm known for my locations in my books. And whenever I do take the reader somewhere, I always want to know, what is that place like to actually live in it? You know, it's not just a matter of going in as a tourist, seeing the pretty things on the surface, going to the shops. Actually, when you're one of 600 people who live there full time all year round, what is it like? Does it drive you mad? Mm. You know, where are the secret little hideaways? What do the locals do? You know, what's the weather known for? I mean, they're really known for their winds there in the winter and mudslides and things. So it's all of that that I wanted to get as well.
Yeah, which I think comes across very well in the book. And then the third and final magical place is Claridge's.
Yes. I mean, it's only brief. Yes. It is just a teeny tiny scene, which might annoy some people, but, you know, it is very important, that scene. There is a motif that goes through the book that absolutely comes together at Claridge's, and only they do it. It had to be with them. And even now, when I go back to that scene, I get a lump in my throat when I read it. You know, some books, when I go back on them, they make me cry, but this one just kind of really just feels like someone's just punched me in the chest or something. Mm. And it's, you know, it just had to be Claridge's. So even though there's not a huge amount of action there, what is there is very, very important to the book.
And magical. So,
yeah.
It's a magical Christmas.
I love that place. It was always my favourite hotel. Because I used to work in that area, I would always go there for drinks and tea and things. So.
Fantastic.
RadioGorgeous.com.
Tell me about you, seeing of your work life. Because you used to be an editor at Vogue.
I did.
And various other fashion.
Yeah, I was a fashion assistant at Vogue on the fashion features desk, so interviewing all the designers and covering the collections. And that was, you know, such a ball. I mean, it's such a great way to spend your 20s. Every night there'd be a party or an opening or, you know, there's always something going on. And I'd ring my boyfriend, now my husband, and say, oh, do you fancy coming to Milan this weekend? We're doing a shopping feature. Or, you know, he'd be like, oh, my God, my husband's an accountant, so he never makes those phone calls to me. And I look back, I've got my notebook still from those days. And it was impossibly glamorous. And I totally took it for granted. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd get freebies all the time and huge discounts. And it was a ball. I loved it. But, you know, then I had my children and...
And your accountant husband.
My accountant husband.
Bring it back.
Exactly. And it just kind of felt time for a new stage. You know, like them, that works well in your 20s. Mm-hmm. You get to a point where you kind of need to catch up with yourself and live responsibly.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so you've moved out to Sussex.
Yes.
And you have three children. And I remember reading, it said, when they allow you to write, you write in a treehouse.
I do.
You know, I'm surprised they let you have the treehouse, let alone let you write it.
It's mainly when they're at school and they can't stop me. I mean, it's gorgeous, but it's freezing, so I can't go down in the winter. It's so cold in the winter. But actually, I like to go down and do my edits down there. And I'll take a cup of tea. It's basically... two big platforms with a rope bridge in the middle, and one of them has got this lovely little house on it. The platform is in the canopy of the trees, so I've got these huge Union Jack kind of beanbag cushions that I just throw down, and I lie looking up it literally in the trees, and I've got a wisteria going around it.
Oh my God.
And I just sit there with a cup of tea and the dogs by my feet. If they've managed to successfully get over the rope bridge without breaking their paws. And I'll just sit down there. And it's a way to be outside and get some air, but get my work done as well. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when did you start writing? This is your fifth book.
Yes, this is the fifth. And my first book, Players, which I started writing when I was pregnant with my daughter. She's now seven. So it was 7 years ago. It took me quite a long time to write it because I began writing it. I was pressured to do so by my agent, who, not my agent now, but I'd written a non-fiction book, and she said, you must go into fiction. I said, no, you don't understand. I don't have a book in me. I definitely couldn't do this. And she said, oh, be quiet and sit down and write.
Go get in a treehouse.
Get in a treehouse and start writing. So I did, and I literally wrote a scene. I had no idea where I was going with it. I didn't know who these people were. I had no plot. It was just a scene that came into my head. Two women sitting in a garden. And it became pretty much the first chapter of what's now Players. And I honestly made it up as I went along. By the time I wrote the end, it was nothing short of a miracle that I'd somehow plaited this narrative together, all these different stories. And I thought, oh, gosh, actually I did it. Wow, amazing. But I could never do it again. But, you know, I got an agent from that. And then, obviously, my publishers, Macmillan, bought it. And they contracted me to write another one. So I had to write another one. And that felt miraculous, too, that I'd managed it. And then I came up with this idea for a book that then became Christmas at Tiffany's. And, you know, I slightly shifted genre between the first two books and the last, most recent three. And that's definitely where I'm most comfortable. And they've just done, you know, really found an audience, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Whatever writer
wants. And how would you describe them? Because I know how I would describe them, but how would you describe them?
Glamorous. Mm-hmm. Yes, they're aspirational. They've got that glossy element to them. But they've all got a really big heart. I really care about getting a very big emotional response. I don't, people say, oh, it's chick lit. I'm very happy with that title. I don't mind. I'm not chippy about it at all. But I'm not strictly chick lit in that my characters are always slightly more gritty, a bit more complicated. I don't necessarily make them that likable to start out with. And that's because I tend to think of them not as victims, I think terrible things are happening to them and can they survive? I think of them as survivors. Terrible things have happened, and the reason they might be a bit defensive or closed off or brittle is because this thing has happened and they're finding a way to get through. And it's my job to bring out the vulnerability in them and get the readers to care. So I think I take my readers always on a big journey. I go quite large on the plot. I make a point of trying to make it hard for anyone to guess the ending.
Yeah, it was difficult. Yeah, yes. And it was and therefore lovely, because not only was that first scary secret revealed, yes, but other secrets along the way.
Exactly.
Family secrets, you know, layers.
There's a lot.
Layers,
exactly. I lay a lot of red herrings. Mm-hmm.
And then happily reunited.
Yes.
Yeehaw!
And there's always, of course, the happy end. And there is, of course, always the big love affair. Mm-hmm. In this one, I have a love triangle, you know, mm-hmm, and that was great fun. But also, I think one thing I love doing and I'm known for are the female friendships. Mm-hmm. I always have a great best friend in there, mm-hmm, you know, and they're always a lot of fun to write. And people love the best friends. They love Kitty in Perfect Present. They love Susie in Christmas at Tiffany's. And they're loving Stella in Christmas at Carriages.
Yeah, she's lovely. Yeah, she's lovely.
They're my favourites, actually.
Yeah, yeah. And they're going through changes as well.
Yeah,
and the
absolutely
friendship is going through changes. It's,
because in each book it's just a segment of their lives. And, you know, I'm going for the happy ever after with my heroine, but, you know, not necessarily for the best friend. You know, they're in different
stages. You
gotta
hurt somebody.
So, exactly. There's
somebody must pay.
Exactly. So
there's only so much happy to go around.
Exactly. Exactly.
Fine. All right. So what's next for you?
Well, I'm really excited. I've got a summer book coming out now, because I was getting a lot of emails from people saying, you know, in January, saying, when's your next book? I'd say, oh, it's November. And you could almost hear the sigh over the interweb, as I call it. So I've got a book coming out in May called The Summer Without You, and that's based in the Hamptons on the East Coast. Yeah, very, very glossy. And that's based around a girl who finds herself in a house share out there, because, of course, it's such a different scene out there.
It totally is,
It's a
million
miles.
And everyone gets
miles.
Their house share, you know.
Yeah.
Like, now you're working on your house share for the
exactly.
summer. You don't want to have one by March, like, that.
Yes.
Forget about it.
And, you know,
you're
we
done.
Can't understand that. You know, we don't. In Cornwall, the sun doesn't even turn up for summer, much less, you know, auditioning to find somewhere to live. So
because the American summer starts in May, you know, the end of May.
Exactly.
Memorial Day.
Yeah.
That's the first weekend.
Exactly. And I've got this poor, rather beleaguered girl, somewhat bemused to find herself living in this incredibly glamorous, glossy life with these people she's never met before.
Which does happen.
Yeah.
Shares get cobbled together.
Yes.
With random people.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's a wonderful setting. How did that come
to you? Well,
I've
been to the Hamptons before, because when I used to go to New York for the shows, the friend I would stay with, she was the editor of the Hamptons magazine. She knew everyone. It was like 8 parties a night. And I went out to the Hamptons with her for a photo shoot.
Trolling up and down Montauk Highway.
Yeah, exactly. And in my mind, I knew I had to come up with a book idea, the constant pressure, what's the next book? It was in the newspaper, and it was just, I can't even remember what the article was, but it was just talking about a Hamptons house share. And it unlocked this whole scene that I knew about, but had forgotten about.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh yeah, the Hamptons, the house share's out there. That's a great way of getting a load of people together, because obviously I always want to shake up the characters and, you know, and I thought, oh, so I did a little bit of research and literally saw that people have to audition. You know, you've got to bring a gift, you've got to, you know, sing for your supper. And I thought, wow, that could be fun. That could be really fun.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's how that all kicked off.
Yeah, that's exciting. You just saying that just brings back a lot of
I slightly feel like I've missed out not having done it myself, and it's far too late for me now.
Well, parts of it were very stressful.
Half
glamour, half stress.
Yes,
you know?
I can imagine.
But that's like any young thing's nightlife anyway.
Well, exactly. And it's, you know, Portobello Road, all that.
You have to be young, you have to be young to put up with the stress.
It's just backdrop, isn't it?
Exactly. Anyway, thank you so much, Karen
Swan. Such a pleasure.
We're really looking forward to seeing what comes out of you next.
Oh! got to get cracking.
Exactly. Well, Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Auntie.
What will be your ideal Christmas gift this Christmas?
A new ski jacket.
Yes. Anyone's listening? if that makes the accountant grade.
Yes, exactly.
If it passes the test. Enough of the mortgage is paid off.
Exactly.
A new ski jacket.
A new ski jacket, please, husband.
Yeah, exactly. Excellent. Well, thank you so much. Merry Christmas.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Follow us on Twitter, radio_gorgeous. Lots of love, darlings.